This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about ethanol as a biofuel and also talking about geothermal energy. But first, here's a problem for you. Say you want to cover something. You want to cover something maybe the size of a CD, maybe the size of a whole wall. And you want to do this in a very regular pattern with features just 10 nanometers in size. We're talking really, really tiny here. And to be of any use, that pattern has to be darn near perfect. No mistakes. It has to be really flat, whatever, you know, perfect. So you know exactly where each dot is going to be on the surface of that disk at any time. It's totally uniform. How would you do that? Well, how about tricking the pattern into forming itself? It's called self-assembly, using various physical and chemical forces to coax chunks of material into arranging themselves on the surface of something. And writing this week in the journal Science, two groups described how they've gone about to do this, producing nanoscale patterns over a large area with a great level of perfection, greater level than ever before. And joining me now to talk about the work is Rachel Siegelman. She's the Charles Wilk Assistant Professor of Chemical Engineering at the University of California, Berkeley, also a faculty research scientist at Lawrence Berkeley Labs in Berkeley. And she wrote a commentary on the two papers, and she's here with us. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Self-assembly. Did I describe it the right way?
Yeah, that was a great description.
What's going on in that surface?
So in this case, what we're doing is we're making polymer chains that want to put themselves into 10 nanometer scale domains. And then we try to get them to arrange into really nice patterns over large areas.
When you say a pattern, it's repeating. It's like if we'd see little repeating what if we could really shine a light on that thing.
Well, so in these cases, from the top, what you'd like to see are 10 nanometer circles spaced about 20 nanometers apart in a perfect array. So in this case, they're both making hexagonal arrays.
Right. And what could you do with something like that? Give me a good product you can make with it.
Well, I think where both of these are going is more towards microelectronics and magnetic memory. So if you can imagine making each one of those dots, say, magnetic, then each one of them becomes a bit for a hard drive. And if you do it at this density, you get... Each dot is a bit.
Right.
So then you get 10 to the 11th dots per centimeter squared, which is just a huge density of bits.
10 to the 11th. I don't want to go there. Well, what about solar energy? Because I'm thinking you're making this on a flat surface, right?
Right.
Couldn't you turn these all into solar cells and make them assemble themselves on any surface you want to?
Well, so that's a lot where my individual research goes to, is that what we'd like to do there is start to incorporate semiconducting polymers. So then you put polymers that absorb light and can separate charge so you can get photovoltage.
Right.
And you need to have those patterned on a 10 nanometer length scale. You'd like to be able to coat something like wallpaper with it. Then you could paper the roof of your house.
It would be that simple.
Eventually.
Well, what's the eventually? What's the part we need? What's the little fly in the ointment?
The fly in the ointment is efficiency right now and lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Our efficiencies are the best ones out there on the order of 5 or 6%,
right,
which just isn't quite high enough to make this work. And we need to make them last long enough that it's worth papering the roof of your house.
Yeah. So you might want to protect them maybe with a layer of something.
So there's a lot of technology in the coating. And we think that a lot of the efficiency question happens at the 10 nanometer level too. That the way this works is you shine light on it, you get electrons and holes, and you have to be able to get them to separate on a 10 nanometer length scale. So getting these kinds of perfect patterns on that length scale is also very important.
Give us an idea of how big 10 nanometers is compared to a hair.
Your hair is usually on the order of 10 to 100 microns. So that's 10 to the minus 6 meters.
Right.
And a nanometer is 10 to the minus 9. So it's three orders of magnitude smaller.
Wow. That's pretty small. 1-800-989-8255. Do you have to coax them into assembly? How do you get them to do their thing?
Well, so the hard drive application I just described has very strict requirements for pattern. So what these two science papers did was they realized how to make that happen. That if we just throw these materials down, they're called blockopolymers, they form these very nice 10 nanometer patterns very quickly. But getting a degree of perfection is really hard. So what they figured out how to do is to give the material cues for how to self-assemble.
Mm-hmm.
So they put specific little cues on the surface that tell the polymers, okay, this is the pattern we want you in, and then they get really nice, perfect order over large areas.
Mm-hmm. And for other patterns, it would be the same way? Or
right.
Are there some things you don't have to have such beautiful order in?
Well, so the photovoltaic application you brought up, we need 10 nanometer spacing, so we don't think we need patterns that are that great. I think IBM published a few things on flash memory,
right,
where, again, you need 10 nanometer length scales, but they The patterns don't need to be perfect. But really where this gets at is where normal lithography can't go, and then you want perfection.
People have been working on this for years, right?
Right.
What is new in these papers?
It's perfection. That for a long time, what we've been able to do is get those patterns. And one of the problems is that when you get those patterns just in two dimensions, on a sheet of paper, for example, there's fluctuations. The dots don't go exactly where we think they'll go. They're little defects, on top of which there's some fluctuation in the positioning. Right, and that if you need to be able to find each dot individually, you can't tolerate that. These two papers figured out how to overcome that by, for example, putting in a sparse set of dots that cue in the rest of the pattern as to where to go.
So they're like anchor points, or something.
Exactly.
They're not like seeds that they spread out from, or you know, they're like points where okay, we start here and we move out to we find the next point.
We don't really understand the kinetics that well.
We don't.
But we know that what usually happens is the nanodomains form first. So probably what happens is everything forms and then fluctuates around until it finds its best position.
1-800-989-8255. Hey, Susan, Lehi, Utah. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, how are you?
Hi there.
This whole thing sounds really, really complicated to me, and it sounds like she's a bit of a genius.
But it wasn't my work.
She's really consumed in her work, and I could really appreciate that. I'm a little bit consumed in mine. I work a little bit with quantum physics and magnetics also, and I'm just wondering if there's any possible way I could maybe leave my information, because I'm working on a product, and I don't know if she's doing private work or if she's with an institution, but I'd like to maybe show what I'm doing to somebody. It's actually to make a healing product through magnetics, and I think magnetics are already being used for healing purposes, but I want to work with electric and magnetic, and I'm just wondering if she's familiar in that field.
All right, let's get a reaction. Are you familiar with magnetics?
So right now what I'm most familiar with are the polymer materials themselves. But as I mentioned before, really where these are going, at least in one application, is patterning magnetic materials.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it will go that way soon.
So the storage, things like
right.
that.
Right. One of the groups publishing this was actually out of Hitachi. And I suspect where they're going with it is hard drive.
So you could have a really super small hard drive that holds a lot of things.
Right.
On. Yeah, interesting. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Henry in Chicago. Hi, Henry.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi there.
I was wondering if you could use this technology for, like, computer monitors or TV screens.
Big screen, giant TV sets.
That would be great.
All wall sizes, right?
Very small resolution.
Well, so what you're talking about, I think, is patterning pixels. And organic light emitting diodes are used to make some devices now. Right now, the human eye doesn't have that much resolution to it, so you don't really need 10 nanometer pixels. But these are ways to get really brilliant colors and really brilliant displays.
Because you could have, like, millions and millions of colors.
Right.
In there. Is it something that could be done?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we know how to do it. It's just a technology question.
So I don't think anyone's working on getting the pixels quite that small.
Right.
I don't think that's the problem of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of groups working on making polymeric light-emitting diodes, using this kind of patterning to help increase the efficiency of those kinds of materials.
John in Pasadena, Maryland. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering about this technology and if it could be used to, say, make a supercapacitor-type thing where you could actually use it as sort of a storage device for electricity.
Like a battery out of this thing.
Yeah. You probably could. Again, what we're talking about now, the last several callers, is trying to put certain functionalities into the polymers. And these two science papers were aimed particularly at patterning applications where you're trying to just use the polymer to translate the pattern into something underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of opportunities for making exact devices out of them. For instance, for putting magnetism in,
right.
Putting in battery-type materials to make supercapacitors.
So how do you move forward to more complicated? You know, you have this single sheet of stuff. How do we make them into microchips or other things, semiconductors like that?
Well, so for semiconductors and microchips, the next step is twofold. One is trying to figure out how to put lots of different patterns together, right? I mean, the dots are useful for hard drives, but for a microchip, for instance, you want wires, you want dots, you want all sorts of patterns, and then you have to figure out how to put all of these together. And that's probably going to be multiple processing steps. For the other applications that have been mentioned, the interesting thing is putting in polymers with those functionalities built directly into them. And that requires that you learn a little bit more about self-assembly. For instance, biological polymers are one,
yeah,
one
yeah.
are an obvious example. Biopolymers have a lot of their own quirks about them.
Give me an idea of what a biopolymer would be.
So a protein or a polypeptide, right? All of the polymers that we've talked about so far are what we call random polymers. Their shape is random.
Mm-hmm.
So when they self-assemble, they can stretch, they can reform across these little nanodomain mm-hmm. interfaces. You put in something where the shape is specified, right? We've all seen the double helix for DNA.
Right.
We've seen some protein folding right. pictures. When you put that in, that's an extra degree of complexity in self-assembly. We have to figure out how to deal with that in order to get this kind of pattern perfection out of functional systems.
Are you saying you could have a whole sheet of DNA that would self-assemble there?
You'd have to work out a lot of details for DNA, but certainly, say, a polypeptide, a smaller building block, we could learn how to pattern that over large areas too.
Wow, so you can have an interface between organic stuff and inorganic stuff.
Right. Right. Well,
metals and living things? Or?
Certainly. Well, living things are usually a larger length scale than this. But certainly one thing you might want to do is to start incorporating metals, semiconductors, all sorts of other functionalities in, and trying to figure out how to – the next step, I believe, in self-assembly is figuring out how to incorporate all of that complexity with the perfection.
Wow. So you want to keep the perfection in. That's
right.
And that's the milepost you're talking about.
Right.
Is that these are perfectly –
perfectly organized.
And once you start fooling around with the other stuff, it may disrupt.
It will certainly disrupt the order.
That order.
It tends to slow things down. It changes the way the polymers behave with each other. So we have to make a couple more leaps to get there.
Well, I think you got a couple of days to go on this, right?
I hope so. Hopefully a career is worth to go.
There you go, or a few of them.
Right.
Thank you for taking time to be with us, Dr. Siegelman. She is the Charles Wilk Assistant Professor of Chemical Engineering, University of California, Berkeley, also the faculty research scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab in Berkeley. We're going to come back, change gears, and talk about harvesting energy from under the ground. Geothermal energy, it is expanding. Maybe you want to put some in your backyard or, you know, in your building, how you can do that. Lots of people are. We'll talk about it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.